Welcome back to Back Podcasts with Matt O'Brien. I'm Thomas Krulikowski. We didn't do this yesterday when we had our Panther-centric podcast. So this one's not going to be just Flyers. We're going to throw some Panthers on top of it. I want to give an update to Henrik Hapola. Earlier this year, we talked about where was Hapola for training camp, what's going on with that. We didn't really know. Well, luckily, we have amazing listeners, and this one is an amazing listener from Finland. And that is Petri. I'm going to butcher this last name.
Yeah, we're sorry in advance, Petri.
Vedempa?
My guess is, yeah, Vedempa.
Anything I was going to say is
probably wrong.
It's going to come off a little too Frenchy and wrong, so I apologize, but... According,
we'll just call him Petri.
Yeah, I think I can do well with that one. He linked some Finnish articles and talking about how he needed to recover from the talent, saying they needed to recover from injury, and last season, you know, he needed to prove a little more, and they're just letting him take a full season in Finland to get back up to speed. But Hapola doesn't seem to be too upset or too worried about it. Let me see. Let's just pull. And his aim is to get back in shape, and he thinks he can make the NHL next season. So that's good news. Henrik Hapola is not going the way.
It'd be nice to learn that from the Panthers, though, and not have to, you know, rely on a listener to our podcast to know that, yeah, he was a little injured. He had some surgery and, you know, wants to recover over in Finland, but, you know, his doctors are, you know, over there, and his family, and I'm sure it's a lot easier to rehab over there than being in a new country and trying to figure it out over here. So, yeah, like you said, it's good that we're not just ignoring him and signed him just to give him the Holmstrom treatment and leave him over there. And it appears he's having a pretty decent year again this year, so... we hope to see him in the Florida Panthers uniform next year, that's for sure.
Yeah, he's in Switzerland right now playing for Lugano. Obviously, he's coming back from hip surgery. And you know, we saw with Nolan Patrick, we saw with Claude Giroux from our Flyers games, you know, just how much like a hernia or like some hip things, it does take like a year and a half to fully get yourself back to your foundation to build back into game shape.
Yeah,
you know,
luckily it doesn't affect you too
much. If you're borderline NHL, just trying to get, you know, like it might be better for him to go back into Finland to fight through that. So I'm happy that it's at least neutral, if not positive news on Hapola, and not, you know, confirmation of, oh, yeah, this is just them getting rid of Hapola because they didn't plan on using him or whatever. So thank you, Petri. We really appreciate it. We're sorry. I mean, he gave us this update. At the end of early October, I think. So we're a little sorry it took us a while to get to it. But blame me for not checking our Gmail as much as I should. While we're already talking about the Panthers, and we got the Panthers fans' attention on this podcast, listen to yesterday's Panthers podcast we posted. If you're listening to this one, you probably already went through it, but maybe you just skipped it. And then also go to the Rat Trick. I have something up there on the Five Steps. I think it was posted on Monday or Sunday or someday. On the Five Steps the Panthers need to do. Last night was more of the same. It was a Chicago-like collapse against a team that has – you know, good defense and good goaltending, but is struggling to score goals and create dangerous chances, just like the Panthers. And basically, what I'm taking from that game, what I'm taking from what's, you know, the messaging before that game and then the dead silence after is, you know, the fan base is starting to sink, the growing knowledge is starting to sink in that nothing's really changing. And it's very depressing. You can see what it's doing to the stands.
Another 9,000 attendance last night.
As much as we will continue to say the Panthers need to do X, Y, and Z, there's a good argument to be made. And a lot of people on Twitter are making this argument and off Twitter are making this argument to me, people who used to run Panthers blogs, people who do run Panthers blogs, people who know people in the hockey industry, basically saying, if the issue, like, you know, it might, the talent might, the issue might not be Bugner or talent or anything. The issue might still be that it's a top-down issue. That, you know, it's just until the top.
The fish rots from the head.
Yeah, you know, it's, it doesn't matter who's in the GM chair. It doesn't matter who's in the coaching chair, because you're going to get some sort of reiteration of this, because, you know, whether it's a budget thing, whether it's knowing how to use the budget that they set forth, and hiring the right people to execute against it, or, you know, whether they're too involved or not involved enough or whatever, you know, this is definitely starting to become more of a ownership and franchise mentality and attitude and overall plan issue, and not just, you know, one or two people making bad mistakes, as, you know, the years and the changes, I think, are showing. Do you have any final thoughts on Florida before we head into some general NHL stuff and then into the Flyer stuff?
I mean, just once again, against the Ducks, it was, you know, if you take away the first minute and the last minute of the game, they either played with or outplayed the Anaheim Ducks for 58 minutes and came up with a loss. And, you know, I'm naturally going to blame the goalie on at least two of the three goals last night. You know, you can argue that the deflection to make it 2-2 was not Reimer's fault, but it's something I've said countless times whenever he's in net. He doesn't look like he knows where he needs to be. He was way too far out on a shot from the point. The puck was going wide, sure, but there was 2 feet of space between his leg and the post that Nick Ritchie was able to deflect the puck past. I mean, that's just got to be – that's got to be a save. The puck's going wide. You need to know where your net is, and you need to make that save. And it's those types of goals that – it's really no wonder. I mean, you can't blame him for the team not starting in front of him, giving up a goal 15 seconds in and being, you know, downtrodden because of goaltending then. But, you know, it's tough when you're consistently outshooting teams almost 2-1 and your goalie can't come up with 24 saves in a game. That hurts. I've played on teams with bad goalies that gave up goals like that, and it's really hard to rebound. It's really hard to come out and be aggressive or play the game you want to play, because in the back of your mind, you have to wonder, you know, what shot is going to go in this time.
Yeah, and, you know, like you said, you're not excusing the team. The team didn't really...
I mean, you can't give up a goal 15 seconds in, but, yeah. You know... I mean,
the team at the start of the game and the team to finish the game didn't play what they needed to play to protect themselves against giving up soft goals, to avoid it, you know, and cut it off at the pass before it happened. And, you know, in fact, everyone deserves some blame for that.
And in fact, if Anaheim, I still kind of want to look into this. If Anaheim did not, you know, score that goal with a minute 22 left or whatever it was, and it went to overtime, I would like to see the percentage of games that the Florida Panthers have gone to overtime in the last, I don't know, 3 to 5 years. Because, you know, that's everyone's argument of, well, you know, we're a competitive team. We're in it. We go to overtime. You know, we play so many one-goal games. But we're always, it seems like, on the wrong end of it. And I take more 2 to 3 goal games.
We don't have the other team's confidence.
Yeah. And I would take more 2 to 3 goal margin games, even if it meant losing more games by 2 to 3 goals, if it meant winning more by 2 to 3 goals as well. You know, just being competitive, that's the loser mentality that the Panthers and fans kind of need to get over. We shouldn't just be happy that they're a team anymore. That was great in the 90s, but... at some point, you got to take the next step and start winning. And it doesn't look like it's going to happen again this year. And, you know, they're going to make all sorts of promises in the offseason again and probably fail to deliver. And something needs to change eventually.
Waivers are starting to get a little more active and a little more interesting. Today on waivers, Valentin Zykov, Scott Darling, both from Carolina, Nikita Shostakov from St. Louis, also by way of Toronto. He's played there in the past. Ben Street, Anaheim. Ben Street. I mean, with a name like that, how am I supposed to care for you? claimed on waivers from yesterday, Dia from the Devils got picked up by Pittsburgh. That makes sense. He's gone back and forth from there. Calvin Bacard from Philadelphia, the goalie, was picked up by Arizona. I don't know if Florida would have benefited from Bacard. I don't think Philadelphia will miss him. He's at this point, I don't know if I wouldn't have tried him, but I definitely wouldn't have had high expectations.
Yeah, I think as much as it annoys me that the Flyers have had like 25 goalies in the last 5 years, it's clearly not working in Florida that you gotta at some point pick up a different goalie and try him. Hutchinson didn't work. Reimer's not working. You gotta do something else.
Well, that's the funny thing about our situation. We're fans of the Panthers and the Flyers, who are both tied for dead last in the East with 22 points. Flyers have played 24 games, so they're technically in last. Panthers have only played 23. They have a magical game in hand. And then it's funny because, they're bad maybe and for different reasons. The Flyers maybe are
too quick to change.
Too impetuous, too quick to change, or, their changes are more penny-wise, pound-foolish, and less balanced to, maybe not do too much damage on the back end as well. Like, they always make moves where there's a lot of risk on the back end if things don't work out. They seem to like those big risk, big wins type of moves. The Panthers on the other end, like you said, are inactive, or choose caution, choose inactivity, or cheap alternatives to change when presented than, doing anything substantial or bailing themselves out with their owner's money. At least you can say it's going to be interesting. At least you can say they're trying. At least you can say that Comcast and Dave Scott, the CEO or whatever he is, are going to be doing something to get fans in the seats, to get fans happy.
Well, and start it's winning crazy. Hockey. It's crazy because I used to hate Ed Snyder for, kind of jumping the gun and making big moves that were risky and it didn't work out. But now that he's gone, one thing I do really miss in ownership groups is his desire to win. He did those, he made those moves. He forced his GM's hand to make moves, to do things because he wanted to win. He didn't want to be patient. And to his detriment sometimes and to the team's detriment. But he always had the best interests of the team in his mind and in his heart. And he did what he felt he needed to do to get that team to the next level. And that's what I really miss.
As the player.
Yeah, it doesn't seem nowadays that many owners in almost any sport have the desire to win that Ed Snyder did. And I think that's missing. I don't understand why you are involved in any part of the sporting world without that competitive spirit, without that desire to win. It shouldn't be about making money or anything. It should be about winning. That's what sports is about.
But I don't even think it's about making money either. I mean, I think it's so, they have something to do when they go to their Florida homes. And when they go to Florida, they're big members of that community. They get to, they get to help change legislation. They get to be a part of the county boards. They get to, get in, you know, the kids can go to what schools they need to go to and all this stuff because they're the Florida Panthers owners, or they have clout. And it's not just, you know, and when he, you know, when Viola goes and sits down at big tables with big guys and they unzip the pants and they lay it on the table and they say, how many companies do you have? What do you own? What do you, you know?
Yeah, you know, I think it's just the membership of the exclusive club. You know, only 31 people get to say that they own an NHL franchise, and
when you have that much money, you run, like, you know, like, you stop buying cars and start buying
franchises.
And, you know, $100 million Manhattan pads and stuff, and, you know, it's a world we'll never understand, that's for sure.
If only Doug Cifu had like 10,000 season tickets that he could give away for free, we might finally have a sellout.
Here's the problem, though. They need the money. If they need all the money, if you know, if they're not just going to be dumping up their personal money to bail out the team, and, you know, the team spend is going to be based on the team revenue, and they're going to, you know, build along with the team and stuff, you're going to need to think of way better strategies to get people in than giving away tickets for positive messages at like the 1-to-1 level.
And you know, I during the game last night, I was watching the Panthers feed, and they had a commercial that next year's season tickets are now on sale. Who is buying season tickets at this point of the year for next year with what you've done on the ice?
And at what price do you have to sell them at to get someone to sign up for them now?
Right. You're barely getting 9,000 people a game right now, and you're making a push for season tickets for next year. Why is anyone – people with season tickets this year aren't even going to the games. I've seen on Twitter and online, I had tickets that game. I didn't bother going. We were probably going to lose. You know, you got to do something to sell tickets. You can't just expect it's not a chicken or the egg situation. Wins come before you get fans. It's – well known.
All right. I love it. I love it. I love that for some reason we're still passionate about this Florida team. And for whatever reason, we're still saying, like, they could do something if they changed X, Y, and Z. But I think, you know, let's make the clean break to the Flyers, who are at least willing to entertain ideas of what they could do and put those into action. I think let's quickly lay out exactly what's happened, and then I can get your thoughts on everything, because I think, one, I'm in New Hampshire, so it's a little harder for me to be as surrounded by Philadelphia media, which is entertaining and loud, and you know exactly what they're feeling. So I want to get your opinion on that, and some of our friends that are big diehard Flyers fans, and you know what they're thinking. But the first shoe to drop was Hextall being fired. Dave Scott from Comcast being more involved, sitting down and being the other voice behind a microphone with Holmgren when they, you know, somewhat answered questions.
They took questions. I wouldn't say they answered them.
Right. We know that Homer's heading up the search, that Dean Lombardi said that he does not want to stay on with the team. He's out of loyalty to Hextall, but he will finish his duties, help find a new GM and transition it that since Hextall's left and move on after that. So they said it'll take weeks, not months. Right now it looks like the rumors are it's Chuck Fletcher from Minnesota's job to lose, and they're meeting with him today as we're recording this. I don't know if it's going to be weeks if that's the case. I think it'll probably be a week if that's the case, or days. But there's also Buffalo's assistant GM, Greeley, who worked with the Rangers, worked with BU and scouting, so he has some solid youth experience, some solid, you know, 20s, getting players transitioned to the NHL experience, which is nice. Ron Francis, former general manager from the Hurricanes, but last I heard, he really was only looking to like advise. He was not looking to GM again. He really didn't like that. And then, you know, guys like Mark Hunter, I'm sure, we'll get a call. There's talk that Dave Nonis got a courtesy call, which the fact that Dave Nonis still gets courtesy calls when a GM spot opens up is about all you need to know that it's an old boys club. Scout Chris Pryor, we talked about, is gone. D coach Murphy's gone. Pryor's a big loss. I mean, he drafted a lot of that core and scouted a lot of that core that and that depth that, you know, we the reason we still even entertain watching the Flyers.
Well, I think, you know, with those types of moves, with Hextall and him being gone, it seems that the philosophical differences were not in, you know, drafting and all that, but more the trajectory after they're drafted, the hesitation and unwillingness to bring some of these guys up. That's where it seems that the philosophical differences are, that Homer alluded to in his press conference. That and you know, there was an article about Carter Hart the other day before the Senators game that, you know, the whole article was talking about how, you know, lauding him for his ability to speak to the media. He's calculated it in what he says. And the biggest quote from that was, "I'm not happy with the path they have me on. I want to be in the NHL sooner than later, and I'm going to do everything I can to get there." And from someone you're saying, you know, talks to the media very well, that's a big indication to me that, you know, if you slow play him and keep him down against his wishes, he might sour on the city of Philadelphia fairly quickly. I mean, he was, "I want to play in Philly. I really like the fans. I really like the area, but you got about till the start of next season to bring me up, or I'm not going to be happy playing there anymore."
Yeah, I mean, they could back into that. I mean, there's also the rumors that they wanted Hextall to fire Hackstall and hire Coach Q, and he wouldn't do it. There's
explanations which deserves to that, be fired if you don't want to hire Coach Q.
Right, and I think that there was also a story put out after Murphy was fired that him and Provorov and some of the other D were not on the same page. Not that it was contentious and they didn't like each other, but they had different ideas of how to work on a day-to-day basis, and it just wasn't working out. And if that's the case, Murphy needs to go too, because, you know, Provorov isn't gone.
No.
So I think that lays out pretty much the whole situation. Gritty is still here, which is good. And I don't think he's gotten a call for the GM gig, but I bet you there would not be any criticism. There would be no criticism from fans. I can guarantee you that. So I guess I only really have one question for you, and then the rest I think we can just kind of free play, look at the cap friendly and shit, and just kind of talk. Was this the right time mid-season to do Hextall first on that day when they did it without a replacement? You know, like, was it the right choice?
I mean, I think I get you're not allowed or not supposed to talk to people while you still have a general manager employed. But, you know, the fact that they're willing to go a couple weeks here without a general manager was kind of surprising to me. But in terms of, you know, what their duties are and all that, yeah, I think now's the best time. You let, you know, the next GM have kind of, 3-4 months before the trade deadline. 3 months probably before the trade deadline to figure out if he needs to make any moves in season. Gives them, you know, 3/4 of the season to work with his staff with scouting and who they're going to draft. I mean, sooner rather than later is probably the best bet. But it depends kind of how long that position's vacant, whether it was worth it at this point or not.
I agree. I think, for me, there's two reasons why I think it was the right time to do it in season rather than waiting till the end of the season. Like, I think if they fired Hextall, let Hextall hire another coach, and then just ditched Hextall at the end of the season, it would have been created a really chaotic situation, like you said.
Yeah, especially with, you know, where they're projected to draft right now. You know, they can't afford to mess that up. They need to give that their replacement time to you know, kind of figure out where they're going to be drafted and scout the players accordingly. And you can't afford to mess that up. You need to give them time to get on the same page with scouts. You're not cleaning the whole house, so to speak. So, you know, I'm sure the scouts and all of them are still working on that. And you need to give them time to communicate with the general manager what they're thinking. Pro scouts to say, you know, I think it's time we move on from this player, or, you know, we've heard that this player from one team's available. Let's see what we can get with that. And let's face it, I mean, if it takes a week, it'll be too late. But one of the rumors was Hextall was unwilling to make a move for Willie Nylander. And you only have now 2 days to get a trade for that done if you want him to play in the playoffs.
The good news is, if you want to swing a big trade, the guy currently rocking the phone is Paul Holmgren, and he will swing a big trade, and he can do it in little amount of time or a whole year. He doesn't, you know, he can do however fast you need it. It might not work out the way you wanted it or thought it would, but you get it done for
you. But he pulls the trigger, yeah.
Yeah. If we talk about this team, they have so many prospects, so many contracts. So, I mean, this isn't coming in. I mean, I'm not trying to make fun of smaller market teams or teams like the Panthers and stuff, but if you were coming in to be a GM of the Panthers, you'd have less work to do than coming in to be a GM of the Flyers, just because you have less players, less employees you have to get to know. You know, the AHL squad is just chock full of prospects. If you look at their cap friendly list, they have Letera's $4.7 million coming off the books after this year. They need a GM who's going to know how to spend that. You have Simmons coming up. That's going to be a critical deal. You know, there's a lot of RFAs out there, including Sanheim and Provorov, Konechny, Lawton. I mean, Lawton's not too big of one, but you don't want to get stumbled up by it. There's a lot of goalies changes. So if this is the GM who's going to be winning the cup, you want him to be the guy who the floodgates are opening. This is the crux of the best time to put someone in.
Yeah, and that was one of the big things that they did actually, you know, say in their press conference and took questions of was, we have a lot of cap space. You know, like you said, there's a lot of players under contract right now, but they're going to have a lot of cap space coming up, and they need to find the guy that's going to utilize that in the right way. And, you know, you never know. Maybe that was Hextall willing to offer Wayne Simmons a massive contract, and ownership and Holmgren as president didn't really like that. There's a lot of speculation going on, but, you know, like you said, the next GM is going to have a lot of room to work with. He has a lot of entry-level and low-money contracts that are NHL-ready and can be put into the lineup if you make a trade for, you know, draft picks or something like that. You have a lot of replacements waiting in the wings. Unfortunately, one of our favorites, Rubsov, is out for the rest of the season, but you know, that's a guy that you might look at. He might make the team next year. Maybe that's, you let Scott Lawton go and give Rubsov the fourth line center next year.
Yeah, and this is why, if it's going to be Chuck Fletcher, if it's going to be Ron Francis, if it's going to be Mark Hunter, you need to get him in here. You need to get him a couple months to get up to speed, and then a couple months to decide what he wants to do, because you're asking him to turn this into a cup team through the core of these young players. So that's giving him, what, 5 years? I mean, like, every GM gets 5 years, but, you know, 3 to 5 years to
make a strong run. Philadelphia is probably closer to three.
Yeah, I mean, they said that they want to win now, not 2 to 3 years from now. So I feel like, you know, they need to win playoff series.
Yeah, and you know,
this year or next year.
One of the graphics they had up during the press conference was the results from the last couple seasons, and the Flyers are make the playoffs, miss the playoffs. You know, for the last 5 years, they Philadelphia does not take losing very well. They want to at least make the dance every year, and
as they should. I mean, the amount of money that they, like, if you think, I mean, maybe parking is about the same in Florida as Philadelphia, but I mean, like, it is as hard to get there, as much traffic, The prices are exorbitant. And, you know, the team spends so much on everything. I mean, they're such a huge organization.
And let's face it, they're embarrassed at the type of they're embarrassed at the type of attendance that they've had the last couple of games. Fans don't want to go anymore because what's the point? Now I'm wasting $100 between you know, food, drinks, parking, not, you know, that's not even counting tickets. You know, fans are spending $100 just to go down to the game. And to watch a loss.
Losing, and if they're losing, it's definitely one more $9 beer than usual.
Yeah.
Just to stomach it. All right. So who?
$9 is fairly generous for a beer. That's like a Bud Light.
Yeah, that's true. That is very true. Are any of the names rumored with the pick for GM scare you, intrigue you, or is it all just kind of like they'd all be good enough?
I like the Greeley from Buffalo. You know, I think the Flyers, one of the things that always annoys me about them is they are the definition of the old boys club. I'm happy that most of the names on the list don't have a connection to Philadelphia prior to this. So that's nice. Usually it's definitely an old player. Or, you know,
that's usually the first requirement.
Yeah. So, you know, it's nice seeing that. And I think through the last couple years, the Flyers have been trying to, you know, hop on the youth movement train. And it'd be better to get a kind of newer message, a new age NHL type of GM to pull the strings there instead of, you know, Fletcher is probably the best bet, the safest bet, at least, I'd say. He's had success. Minnesota makes the playoffs fairly often, but they don't do anything. They've never taken that next step. So I'd be kind of hesitant on that. You know, he did build a good franchise there, but like I said, Philadelphia doesn't take losing. They don't want to just make the second round of the playoffs or just make the playoffs every year. They want to go to the conference finals. They want to go to the Stanley Cup finals. They want to win. And so I don't know if Fletcher is the right guy for that. And yeah, I mean, that's my big requirement is just go for someone outside. Don't bring in another old Philadelphia boy that, you know, is just going to maintain the status quo. Bring someone in that might shake it up a little bit and give you a new message.
The Minnesota Wild blog, Evolving Wild, had a pretty good thread on their evaluation of the Fletcher years. And, you know, the one thing they did say is there was only one time really that ownership like kind of opened up the purses and kind of let him have the money, and that was to sign guys that the ownership wanted and put out the Suter and Parisi contracts, which, you know, I wonder if Fletcher, with the backing of Comcast, with all this cap space and everything, would be a different Fletcher and would be somebody that maybe would result in better results than he saw in Minnesota. The one thing you can say is for the teams he put together in Minnesota, they all played hard. They were in every game. They beat a lot of teams that were better than them. And they played a mix of the style Philly likes, but progressive puck possession hockey. I mean, they got guys like Nino Niederreiter who would be welcomed in Philadelphia, but also puts up good advanced stats, plays hockey in a way that is exciting for fans and also is tailored to 2018.
Yeah, and, you know, he also, I think, was the one that traded away Brent Burns, though. So.
I don't know.
But, no, and you know what? Everyone gets one. And Brent Burns was not Brent Burns. You know, Brent Burns in San Jose was not the same one that was in Minnesota. And I do believe he was probably the voice that kind of put Brent Burns back on defense, which is where he excelled. He was a winger when he in his first couple years in Minnesota. So, yeah, I mean, he does construct a team to be more of a playoff team, and when that's your ultimate goal, you know, that would certainly be what Philadelphia is looking to. It's just with so many young guys and all that, I would like someone to manage contracts very well, you know, manage expectations of the young players. And, you know, he had the experience at BU. Yeah, I don't think he is going to have to, you know, recruit players to come to Philadelphia. It's pretty easy for players to want to come here outside the original six. I think Philadelphia is probably, you know, the biggest franchise that players want to go for because of, you know, history and the city and all that. I know they need to make a decision fairly soon. It was weird that, you know, they're willing to go a couple weeks or, you know, he said not months, but we'll see. And the other thing that was kind of interesting to me, if the whole plan is to give the GM, the new GM, the authority to bring in a new coach or make the decision on the coaching staff now, you know, if you were willing to let the new GM fire and bring in a new coach, why not just get rid of Hextall, along with Hextall? You know, so... That's the weird thing to me is that it doesn't seem like they want to get rid of Hextall, and, you know, you can understand it, but at the same time, he hasn't really delivered on promises, and, you know, one of the things I think it was during the press conference, they were talking about Dave Hextall, that he was a very fiery and kind of in-your-face coach at North Dakota, and, you know, what happened to that? Is it because they're being paid and the professionals and NHL players won't stand for that he had to kind of relax a little bit? But then you see with the New York Rangers, they brought in a college coach and he's treating them very much like a college team and it's paying off very handsomely for him.
I think the big difference is that team doesn't have like a Claude Giroux who's very established in the league and just probably, frankly, him and Voracek and stuff just wouldn't put up with that, probably.
Yeah.
I mean, we know what they did with Dry Island, so it's not like, I mean, the best thing about Philadelphia, really, is their players just, they don't take shit, even from their own coach, when they don't like their coach. I mean, this goes back to Bill Barber, and, you know, it's a Philadelphia tradition, so when you hear about some of the things, probably about, like, Murphy and Hacksaw soon, it won't be a shock. You're right, though. It's very interesting the way in which they did it. I mean, I think what I would assume is they tried to do the GM thing behind closed doors, get somebody to agree tentatively, whatever, and they just weren't getting anywhere, or they weren't getting. They needed to draw the attention of somebody important or something. And they just figured
that's the safer one. You know, if you leave a vacancy behind the bench, it can very much affect the player the immediate term. Whereas the GM, I'm sure the players, some of them weren't happy about it. But it's not like the messaging in the locker room was completely different from, you know, they did have a game the next day. They did need a coach.
It's hard for Hextall, though, so. I mean, but then you can also argue that it's hard for Hextall to have an effective message in the locker room when it's pretty obvious that he's the next to go.
Yeah, I thought, especially after blowing a two-goal lead in the last 8 minutes of a game against the Ottawa Senators, you know, if you were unwilling to fire him before that, that certainly would have been the tipping point for me. And that's why I honestly think you might see Hextall behind the bench to at least end the season, or maybe at least until they're completely out of playoff contention. They might bring someone in for the last 10 games or whatever, but, you know, it's if you're not going to fire him now with everything that's going on, I don't think you're going to see him get fired at all.
Possibly. There is a chance that they are maybe sitting down with some general managers and just saying, like, you know, who are the coaches you would want to hire? And, you know, they might say, well, we'd rather just stay with Hackstall. And once you get rid of Hackstall, you can't go back to him. Obviously, Murphy wasn't going to be able to step in. So who steps in the meantime? Ian LaPerriere, who's runs their one of the worst penalty kills I've ever seen in my life. Maybe it makes sense to just, you know, it's untenable for Hackstall, and it's probably unfair to Hackstall to kind of leave him twirling in the wind like this. But efficiency wise and stuff, I can see why Comcast just decided to do it. Like, I mean, it's Comcast; they don't give a shit. They'll let him twist in the wind as long as they can.
That's true. Customer service is not their strong suit. So.
But if they're sitting down with these general managers, they might say Chuck or Greeley or Ron Francis or Hunter or whoever they're interviewing gave notice. You know, these are our priorities, the things we want to see changed. And these are the order we think that they should be changed in. And these are the tentative deadlines that we'd like to see them changed by. What are your thoughts? And you know, they might have Hackstall below. They might have goalie getting – you know, getting the Simmons contract and maybe even trading Voracek or, you know, figuring out next year's plan first before the coach. And then a GM might say, I believe that too. And they head that way. Or, you know, the guy they really want might say, listen, I want to bring in this coach and just see if he works before we do the search in the offseason.
Yeah. And one of the things I thought was, you know, the philosophical differences that they keep talking about. That Hackstall had approached Ron Hackstall and approached you know, the people above him, saying, I don't have the team that I want. You know, I don't have the roster that I want. You know, you need to bring this guy up or that guy up. And so maybe it's, yeah, finding a general manager that's going to make those moves, bring the right guys up, and give Hackstall the team he wants. And so when he gets, you know, we've said on this podcast before that, you know, this is finally, you know, the team Hackstall is supposed to coach to the second, third, fourth round of the playoffs. But maybe it's not. Maybe he wanted other players. You know, one of the big things I keep going back to is Travis Sanheim is not playing all that well. But he was Hextall's nephew, and maybe Hextall was hesitant to send him down, demote him, trade him, whatever. But Hackstall wants a different team. Maybe he wants Philippe Myers up or Sam Morin, and can construct a defense better around that type of player. But he wasn't getting that support from above him. And that's where, you know, like we were talking about on the podcast yesterday, maybe a shift in the NHL needs to occur where we give coaches more power and more say over their lineup other than just in training camp. And even then, it doesn't seem like they have, you know, how many stories do we have of these young guys throughout the league that should, by all accounts, make the team from camp, but the GM or ownership overrides the coach's decision and says, well, no, you know, we got to play this player instead. Maybe it is time to give coaches more say over their roster and who they're dressing and who's in their lineup every night. The natural thing is to, you know, if the coach isn't getting the NHL team to play how they need to play, it's fire the coach. But, you know, behind closed doors, if the coach is telling the people above him, well, I don't have the players, but we don't find out about that as fans because they don't want to, you know, indicate that there's problems, you know, that high up in the organization or whatever, you know, everyone just jumps down the coach's throat, but it's, they don't have a say. And I think if you kind of combine, like you said, whether president or GM gets combined or GM and coach gets combined, you know, if you, the more voices you have, you run into too many cooks in the kitchen, where you're just arguing back and forth of, well, we pay this guy too much, he's got to play, or, you know, I don't think this guy's ready, even though you do, and nothing gets done. You kind of stagnate and no moves get made. There needs to be more, yeah, you know, like I said yesterday, the coach is with the team every day. The coach is at the ice level. They see what's going on. I think they should have a lot more power and a lot more say on the roster construction than I think they currently do. And I think some of these, some of the more successful teams year in and year out that do that kind of do have that say, you know, are able to bring guys up or at least the general manager listens to them when they say, I want this player.
Some would argue that's harkening back to the original days and the old way hockey was, with coaches having that type of input. Next year, they have projected $32 million in cap space. There's over $5 million. There's like about $6 million just from goalies. Coming off. There's probably $7-8 million in forwards coming off the books, and that's a lot of money. What do you want them to do with that? Do you want them? I mean, there's a solid chance that, like, you know, you're looking at the way Carlson's playing this year and everything. It's like, oh, there's a chance maybe that doesn't end in an 8-year contract in San Jose. You know, there's a decent free agent market. And, you know, William Nylander could easily eat up some of that cap space in the next day or two. Are there any things that stick out to you, like, oh, this team really needs to get Bobrovsky back? This team really needs to get Panarin? This team needs to – because you have the money to spend it any way you want.
Well, I mean, I think the natural – choice is spending that money more on forwards, just because you can have very cheap but good goaltenders. You know, if you bring Carter Hart up next year, he's not making that much money. So maybe then spend that, you know, excess money that you have from goalies on a decent backup that can play 40 games if he has to. But, you know, still throw Carter Hart the majority of the starts as long as he's playing well. You have you know, a lot of young defensemen, so your blue line salary might be fairly cheap too. So maybe it is re-signing Simmons, which, you know, I'm kind of up in the air on that one. I don't know how much longer he has left. I think he has a couple years, but, you know, Johnny Gaudreau has said he's wanted to come back to Philly, so maybe, you know, engineer a trade for him, bring his salary on the books. If you're not going to prevent goals, you at least need to score them. So maybe you do go a lot younger on the blue line and in the crease and go kind of older and expensive on the front end.
Bobrovsky's, I think, the one person I think they need to throw an offer out. If he's a free agent, I think whether it's, you know, a lot of money short term or it's, you know, they're willing to do an 8-year contract with a goalie of that age or what. I think, you know, the need is there and the money's there and you can still do a lot of other stuff. Even if he signs like an 8-year, $10 million contract, you still have that much cap space. You can do a bunch of different stuff that it's almost unnecessary, to put what you think is your best offer out there for him.
Yeah,
I know he might just turn it down automatically because of the last time he
was
here.
I was gonna say I don't know Bobrovsky's mindset, but if I were him, I would not even entertain. I would not even take a Flyers phone call after the way they treated him last time. You know, I'd probably even tell my agent to give them a call and say don't even bother. Because it's a no. I don't care how much money. I don't care what the term is. It's a no with how you treated me last time.
I'd love to see Willie Nylander here. I'd love to see Willie Nylander anywhere in the league. He's one of my favorite players. But, I mean, I don't think offensively they need to – I mean, it'd be nice to get a Panarin. It'd be nice to get Nylander or swing a deal and, you know, bring somebody in, but I'm not too worried about their offense. I think the biggest thing is maybe not so much the talent they add, but the finishing of dismantling the crap. You know, Laterra obviously takes care of himself, the drug lord. Dale Weiss has been okay, but, you know, it's still $2.35 million next year. He's 30. He's not that great. Raffle's going to leave at the end of next year. Jordan Wheel, I think, you know, that experiment can end. I really like Wheel and everything, but it's 1.75 right now for him. I don't see that being worthwhile, even just maintaining or taking a little off the top and going, you know, like 1.5 or whatever. You know, but like McDonald has another year at $5 million. Do you buy that out? Do you just bury it? What do you do with it? Gudis, I think, is tradable. It's 100% tradable, and that's somebody I would like to see gone. And I think they have to do that. I mean, whether you like Gudis, whether you think he's worthwhile, I think they want complete change. Doing it this early, going from just the GM spot and leaving Hackstall for the GM or whatever, shows that they're open to a really completely different direction. And they're willing to finance it, which is the biggest part. So I think they could do a lot of things, and they could do something crazy, like get rid of all the dead weight and spend a bunch of money in the offseason, or just save it for signing the kids.
Yeah, I mean, looking at the free agents for next year, I mean, there's a lot of guys you could offer a lot of money to that could improve this team. Like you said, if he gets there, you know, throw a max contract at Erik Karlsson. You know, bring Jason Spezza in to be a third, fourth line center. You know, throw money at Panarin, Duchesne. There's a lot of guys out there that could cost a lot of money that would help improve this Flyers team. But I don't know if the only problem with going for a goalie, especially in free agency, is you're going to have to give him too much of a term that would probably very much upset Carter Hart, because it kind of blocks him from making his move up to the NHL. And I'd rather, you know, wait for Carter Hart to be ready and be the starter than bring in someone that's going to start for 2 or 3 years and then kind of be over the hill or not be good enough anymore. And so that, like, the Flyers are in a weird position where they have all these young guys that aren't really that young that could be ready to play, but their salary is not really going to be enough. You're going to need to make the money somewhere, and you know, you're going to have to kind of make a decision of either getting rid of some of the young defensemen that you have in the system that are waiting to come up, or you know, just making it so you have a ridiculous 12 forwards on your roster, or just be content kind of the money that you spend and not being one of the top spending teams in the league.
I bet you Sean Couturier is looking at all this cap space and like, oh my, why did I, why? But center, you mentioned, you know, getting Duchesne or Spezza to anchor some of the centers. I think Holmgren has said that, you know, beyond goaltending, one of the things they do want to do is shore up some of the center depth just to make sure that they don't have to rely on only young centers behind Couturier. That, you know, they do have a better Filppula is basically what he wants.
He wants, sure, you know, he like won't want to move, level. But Joe Thornton's a free agent this year as well.
Well, he might move if Carlson's moving with him.
No, yeah, I mean, there's certainly options to bring in a center, and Thornton would be kind of great because, you know, he shouldn't or really can't be that, you know, number one 20 plus minutes a night. You put him on a third line that plays, you know, 12 minutes, 15 minutes a night, and that makes your third line a goal-scoring line, without a doubt. It doesn't really matter who's on his wing. Joe Thornton has over 1,000 assists in the NHL. He's going to find them.
Any rush on Voracek? Any doing anything with him? Do you think he needs to stay? Do you think they need to look at moving him? He's at 825. He's 29 years old, and he's got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years after this one. So, I mean, it's not like they
have time to decide. I think, especially with bringing in JVR, I think one of Voracek or Simmons has to not be on this team moving forward. You're going to have to get rid of one of them. You'd hate to lose Simmons for nothing. with how he's played in Philadelphia, and he's definitely more so than Voracek, at least. You know, he embodies the, he embodies the city of Philadelphia. He's a fan favorite, you know, for good reason. He brings it most every night. He's not afraid to mix it up. He is, you know, he could have been a career Flyer. He is out and out a Philadelphia Flyer, and I think fans would really hate to see him go. Voracek seems to be, you know, fans either love him or hate him. I think he's definitely one you could get away with moving, especially if you brought in the right pieces for him and made it worth your while. I would try and trade Voracek by the deadline, especially if it looks like you're not going to be going anywhere, to free up some money to re-sign Wayne Simmonds for next year and, bring in some more talent.
What's the number, what's the term on Wayne Simmonds that you want? I mean, obviously he's not making $7 million. He's not making Van Riemsdyk money. But he is a UFA, so, you know, his just under $4 million cap hit will probably get an increase.
Five and a half would probably be right in the range that I'd be comfortable paying him. Maybe a little more just because he's a UFA, can go anywhere he wants, and, because he certainly has deserved it in his time in Philadelphia. But I think you could definitely get it. You know, I don't think the Flyers have the issue of having to overpay UFAs to stick around. Players generally want to come here. They want to play here. And I think with his role on the team, he'd be comfortable sticking around for at least somewhat of a hometown discount. He might be willing to take a little less money to stay in Philadelphia rather than going to a team that maybe isn't so well set up or, where he would have a lower role, a reduced role. I would expect him to make at least somewhere in the $5 million range.
Is there a term you'd like? Is there a term you'd like to stay away from?
Well, definitely not max. I would be, five for five would be about where I'd be comfortable giving to him. Maybe if you get him for a little less money, maybe extend it out to six. But then he's a big guy. Not that he's breaking down, but it gets tougher and tougher to play the older you get, especially the type of game that he plays and the type of role that Philadelphia has him in. He definitely deserves more than 2 or 3 years, but he does not, you shouldn't sign him to anything more than five.
Yeah, I agree there. I my brain's saying trade Simmer, he'll come back in the summer.
Yeah, that's fair. He might, especially if you do it well and kind of trade him to a team that has a chance to win this year. Let him get a shot at a cup elsewhere, and I think you could recruit him back. If you kind of bury him and trade him to somewhere like Arizona or something, it might be a lot tougher to convince him to come back. But, Simmer has outperformed Jake Voracek pretty much every year that they've been on the team together. And so it would be tough to keep Voracek and ask Simmonds to take less money than Voracek earns, because, he definitely has, the stats to back up that he's more valuable and better for the team than Voracek is.
I mean, at least you could say, I don't know. I mean, like, Voracek did put in 85 points last year. But if you're looking goals-wise, yeah. And how many of those assists are... I think Voracek is a player that's more replaceable given who the Flyers have in their system, on their depth. And if I can get Simmer on a smaller contract for the same amount of years left in Voracek's contract, I probably would do it.
Yeah.
Just because I think... One, you do need some money. So you do need to have, if they're going to have go cheapen the goalie, like you said, with Hart and maybe just, I don't know, Brian Elliott, but a Brian Elliott type backing up Hart.
And to kind of your point, maybe that is why you buy out Andy McDonald at the end of this year, just to have some of that cap on the books for the next couple of years, because your blue line is probably going to be, and your crease is probably going to be pretty cheap over the next couple of years, that you can certainly afford to swallow that salary, I don't think they're going to have a problem getting to the floor, but it helps give you that little buffer that you then can maybe make a trade for a high contract, for a low contract, because you have that couple million on the books. For Andy McDonald to not play, which I'd be paying him not to play. I would have done that years ago, but.
Yeah, imagine paying him to play. That's the real weird.
Right.
It's interesting that there's clear issues. I mean, like, we can, just like with the Panthers, I mean, we can point to where things need to change, but I think. Unlike with the Panthers, the amount of prospects they have, I mean, their reserve list is like 75, something like that. It's ridiculous. The promise that those prospects have, it's not just a bunch of contracts. I mean, there's guys like Carter Hart. I mean, there's probably 4 to 5 good chances for starting goalie in their prospect pool right now. There's not even 4 to 5 good prospects in the Panthers prospect pool, really. Legit.
Of any position, yeah.
And there's so much that, like, it's,
well, that's why they're,
I don't really have any expectations. I don't have any really wants with the Flyers, other than I think Hacksaw needs to go. I mean, I think if Hacksaw is the coach next year, you haven't really done enough, in my opinion. And I think the other thing is start playing the younger guys in the minors and seeing what you have is something else I'd like to see. Mainly, let's get Philippe Myers up here. That's a number one, I think, it's getting Philippe Myers into the NHL and seeing what he has, and deciding whether him or Sanheim or who you can move to get some better talent, because you also need to get not just have all your prospects in your back six. I would like to see them go get like a Jake Muzzin or a top four stable from outside the organization, with some pedigree, with some talent that can bolster this defense, because I don't want to be in a situation like this year where there's maybe one defenseman on a night with a half-working brain.
Well, and that's why the Flyers are in a very interesting position, and I think maybe the Hextall firing might have come too late, because by keeping all of those young guys down in the AHL for so long, you're keeping their next contract down. And they're in this interesting spot of having a lot of good talent ready to come up, but they're going to be cheap and they're going to need to find a way to spend that money, to be salary cap compliant. And that might mean you end up burying 2 or 3 of these good prospects, longer than you should, and basically forever, if you don't get rid of them. And they've hurt themselves by not willing to make a move on some of these young guys because they want to be patient and bring them up in their own system. But I think 2 years ago, you probably could have got a lot more for a guy like Sam Morin than you can now. Same with Travis Sanheim. A lot of these guys, you could have gotten at least more draft picks and draft picks down the line for these guys. And now it's a lot tougher to do that because they're entering their prime seasons. They're entering these times where they should be everyday NHLers. Teams don't know what they have. If you had gotten more and more NHL time, or Philippe Myers more NHL time by this point, teams would be willing to give up more and take more of a risk trading for him, because they would at least have a baseline of what kind of NHL player they're going to be. And now it's just a risk. They might be AHL players their whole career. They might be top four NHL defensemen. You're less willing to make a deal as an outside GM for that much of an unknown. As great as their drafting has been, you know, it might have all been for naught if you can't get these guys into the NHL and you can't get anything out of them for a trade. You know, you just kind of had one of the best prospect systems in the NHL for years and did nothing with it.
Well, yeah, if you're not pushing people through, if there's not, you know, progression, if there's not steps and there's not benchmarks that you're pushing people through. Like you said, I mean, it's kind of weird that Oscar Lindblom took a lot that long to get to the AHL. It's kind of weird that Travis Sanheim is still, you know, a defenseman who maybe at the time of draft were like, oh, this is weird. But like Shabbat, but the year or two after really turned some heads. And what did they do? They stuck him in the AHL and they yo-yoed him a little bit and they didn't play him in the NHL level. And had they, we wouldn't be in this situation right now with him. We'd at least know whether he's, you know, in the NHL or the AHL. He'd be one way or the other by now. It's frustrating, but the good news is there's going to be a guy coming in here who, by all accounts, will not have Philadelphia history, will not have Philadelphia connections or background or knowledge, like, you know, that would keep him from just coming in and just changing all this for the other without any hesitation. I mean, I think a lot of the issues with Hextall was not wanting to change something that he put into place and would be for nothing. And I think that was a lot of point of pride with Hextall, is he didn't want to give up on things and have things mean nothing in the end. He wanted to see things through instead of changing course. And I'm happy they changed course because I'm now watching. I mean, I think one of the things people ask us the most is like why we don't cover Philadelphia as much, and it was probably the Hextall effect. It was probably just the mediocrity without the changes, without the
because there was no changes for, you know, 2 to 3 years. It was just the same team and same thing over and over again. And I mean, I guess you could argue the Panthers are the same way, but there was a lot more to be angry about and a lot more to talk about with Florida than there was Philadelphia, because, you know, it was what it was. And now it's exciting that there's some new blood coming in that might shake things up and might make this team, you know, interesting again.
All right, before we sign off on the podcast, let's get your final Willie Nylander. Does he sign in Toronto? Is he traded? Or is he playing in Europe and we're waiting till the summer or whatever to figure it out?
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if a non-playoff team ended up traded for him in the next couple weeks or even by the deadline. You know, I think a lot of teams that were interested at the beginning of the season and now, you know, because of where they are in the standings, were willing to take the chance that the price might come down after December 1st because he won't be able to play in the playoffs for Toronto. And if my team's not making the playoffs, he's still valuable to me, and the ability to negotiate with him first at the end of this year is still worth something. But, you know, you can tell Toronto, well, you know, we can give you a player that you can use you know, for the rest of the season and in the playoffs, where Nylander, yeah, sure, you can use him for the rest of the season if you end up signing him, but you won't get him in the playoffs. So I think he's still, if he does not sign with Toronto in the next day, I think he still gets moved at some point this year. Because, frankly, if it goes past, you know, if he can't play in the playoffs for Toronto this year, I don't see what's stopping him from doing the same thing next year if he's still their property. You know, he's still not going to be happy asking, you know, being asked to take a pay cut with all the money that they're spending, with the rumors of how much Mitch Marner's going to get. You know, if he doesn't sign by December 1st, I don't think he's going to play another game in a Toronto sweater And I think it gives a lot more leverage to teams outside of the playoffs to negotiate a deal.
I agree. If he's not signed by December 1st, there's no reason Toronto should keep him around. He's not going to be able to play in the playoffs for you this year, as you said, if he's not signed by December 1st, even if he can play the rest of the regular season. And there's no real reason to drag it out. I mean, I think maybe they don't trade him right away. You know, maybe they can trade him at the draft. Maybe they can trade him in August. You know, they can afford to make his life uncomfortable. But I think the plan would be, yeah, why should we're already going to be in such a cap pinch. Why should we continue to put off those cap situations to fit in Nylander if he's going to be playing hardball? We got to move forward without him. And I think they're going to give him enough time to December 1st. I think, of course, Nylander's doing the right thing and holding out for what he thinks he's worth. I think he gets moved. I think he's moved Friday around 7 p.m., 8 p.m., maybe like first intermission or something, and it'll break or something like that. But I think he gets moved, and I would bet money he is moved right to Philadelphia.
I mean, they certainly have the best chance at it.
So. I'll definitely bet you. I won't bet money. I guess I won't bet money. I'll bet you a beer or two, like a six pack or something. Because I need something positive to believe in, something to throw my whole faith behind. Because right now it's the Colorado Avalanche, and that just feels weird.
Yeah. No. Please.
Yeah. So I'm just gonna put on my William Nylander Sweden Junior jersey, authentic. That he got concussed and cry myself to sleep until he's gone.
Right.
This NHL year has been, I feel like, you know, both of my teams that I like, the Flyers and the Panthers, sitting at 22 points, dead last in the East, is a sign that this season's just not about me. Nylander hasn't played yet. I mean, it's just.
The only good thing is Mikko Rantanen's leading the league in points, even though I hate, you know, that he plays for the Avalanche. I still love Mikko Rantanen, so I'm happy about that. But I just wish it was in a Florida sweater.
Definitely hurts us. It should be ours. Yeah, so I guess that's it for this podcast. It's a little longer because we wanted to, of course, thank Petri. For that Henrik Kapila update. And then, of course, after last night's.
And keep it coming, Petri. You know, I'd like to hear a lot more about Hebuniemi and, you know, anyone that has a chance at making the NHL from Finland. As our listeners probably know, we are very big fans of Swedes and Finns, and it's unfortunate that you don't hear as much over here in the States about players from there. And, you know, I think without a doubt, we think that they're some of the most talented players in the world. So, yeah, any more information you Scandinavians have for us, we'll talk about it.
Yep, feel free to even send some audio files. We'll just drop them in, especially if you don't want us to butcher your name.
Yeah, at least send us some pronunciations. Again, we're sorry if we mispronounced it.
I can't believe I do a podcast with how lazy my tongue is. Thank you for listening. Hopefully
good hockey.
Hopefully on the other side of this horizon there's good hockey, because you Flyers fans, you Panthers fans, you deserve it. I don't know how you guys do it. I don't know how you girls do it. I mean, like, it's ridiculous. It's I understand why I do it, because I've learned that I'm just a masochist.
Yeah, right.
So it makes sense why I put myself through it, because I like to do it to myself. I don't know why others do. Maybe take up what's that? Pickleball? Is that the new thing?
Oh, I don't know. Everyone needs. Never heard that.
It's like like small court tennis with like smaller, like weirder rackets and stuff. And it's more like explosive.
Or is it just extra large ping pong?
That's a good question. but usually it's like doubles. It's
not. Although I guess extra large ping pong would just be tennis, so maybe it's just large ping pong.
I don't know. I don't know enough about pickleball, but maybe everybody should just play some pickleball if you're in Florida. If you're north of Florida, you're not going outside to play anything but hockey and tiddlywink. So
play some jacks by the malt machine.